Good evening, everybody. I want to invite you to open up to Numbers 25, and when you get Numbers 25, mark it so you can come back to it quickly, and then go to Revelation chapter 2. It has been a great day. Two families placing membership. It's wonderful. Been able to come back and worship. And Bud and Barbara are able to be here tonight. They couldn't make it this morning, but here they are sitting right there. Yeah, we're talking about you. We prayed for you this morning. We'll talk about you tonight. Are you ready? Revelation chapter 2. We're looking at the letter that Jesus dictated to the church at Pergamum. And this is part of what he says there in verse 14. Revelation 2:14. But I have a few things against you, because you have there some who hold the teaching of Balaam, who kept teaching Balak to put a stumbling block before the sons of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols, and to commit acts of immorality. So we're seeing a commentary that Jesus is making to the church at Pergamum about what happened back in the wilderness, when the children of Israel were in the wilderness, and he was leading them from place to place until he would bring them into the promised land. And if you go back to Numbers 25, that's where we read about the actual event. But this is information that the details of which are not necessarily in the Numbers account. So God is filling us in on some of the things that happened sort of behind the scenes, you might say. Now, Balak, that we read about in Revelation, contacted Balaam in the 22nd chapter. And you may be familiar with that story. If you're not, it's pretty simple. Balak hired Balaam as a prophet to curse God's people. And Balaam said, well, yeah, I sure do want your money, but I can only say what God tells me to say. And so three times, rather than curse them, he blessed them, because that's what God told him to do. Balak got mad. He was the king of Moab. He was trying to get Israel off his back, so to speak. Didn't want them where he was. Afraid of him. And so that's what happened. And Balaam, apparently, according to Revelation, what Jesus told John, said, well, here, God won't let me curse them, but if you can get them to worship your idols and commit acts of immorality with your girls, then you'll do them just as much harm as any curse I would put on them would do. So we're picking up at verse chapter 25, verse 1. While Israel remained in Shittim, the people began to play the harlot with the daughters of Moab. There you go. That's the council of Balaam that Jesus was talking to Pergamum about. They invited the people to the sacrifices of their gods, and the people ate and bowed down to their gods. So Israel joined themselves to Baal of Peor, and the Lord was angry against Israel. The Lord said to Moses, take all the leaders of the people and execute them in broad daylight before the Lord, so that the fierce anger of the Lord may turn away from Israel. Did anybody catch the title of tonight's lesson, by the way? It's a question, is that Christian? Is this Christian? Well, it's God. It's God saying, you know you're doing what you're not supposed to be doing, and I'm going to have you executed. And he's telling Moses and the leaders of Israel to take these people and execute them, that is, to kill them in broad daylight. When's the last time you killed somebody in the name of the Lord? Now, I'm not talking about what you wanted to do with your children as you were trying to bring them up. Now, I'm just talking about the reality. This is the reality of what was going on in that day at that time. Moses said to the judges of Israel in verse 5, Numbers 25, verse 5, each of you slay his men who have joined themselves to Baal of Peor. And then behold, one of the sons of Israel came and brought to his relatives a Midianite woman in the sight of Moses and in the sight of all the congregation of the sons of Israel while they were weeping at the doorway of the tent of meeting. Now, why are they weeping at the doorway of the tent of meeting? Because this great transgression is occurring and they can't seem to do anything to stop the people from being stupid. As I say again, the Bible is so outdated, there is nothing relevant here at all. So they're weeping, they're frustrated, they're crying out to God. And while they're doing that, this guy brings in one of these women that he's been encouraged to fornicate with, and that's exactly what's going on. Verse 7, when Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, saw it, he arose from the midst of the congregation and took a spear in his hand, and he went after the man of Israel into the tent and pierced both of them through, the man of Israel and the woman through the body. So the plague on the sons of Israel was checked. I ask again, is that Christian? At this point in time, it was. This is what God wanted to happen. Wouldn't this make some business meetings rather interesting? The plague was checked, but it says those who died by the plague were 24,000. That's a lot of people, 24,000 people. 600,000 fighting men came out of Egypt, but we're still talking about thousands of people. And you know what the danger was. God was trying to bring these people out of bondage and into a promised land, give them a law to make them a people holy unto himself. And he is a jealous God. He's not going to share these people with anybody else, any other God. Yeah, you can worship me. You can worship those other gods too, as long as you put me first. No, nothing like that. There's one God. And that's the one they're supposed to worship. And this is not what was happening. They were being led astray. Well, it's not over yet. Verse 10. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, has turned away my wrath from the sons of Israel, in that he was jealous with my jealousy among them, so that I did not destroy the sons of Israel in my jealousy. Therefore I say, behold, I give him my covenant of peace, and it shall be for him and his descendants after him a covenant of a perpetual priesthood, because he was jealous for his God and made atonement for the sons of Israel. Now, 5, 10, 20 years from now, somebody might ask, how did you get that perpetual priesthood? And he could answer, well, I took a spear and I killed two people. Well, that's part of it. But the reality is, his answer would have been, God saw the zeal that I had for him. That zeal was expressed in his killing of those two people in that circumstance. God had already said to kill those who were leading the people astray, and he was following through, but God knew his heart, the zeal that was in his heart. Now, don't go off on a tangent here before I finish the lesson. I'm not in any way, shape, or form working up to a point where I can say, hey, as good Christians today, grab a spear. No, that's not where this is going. But that's what happened then, and God didn't say, well, I didn't really want him to kill anybody. No, he did want him to kill somebody, and he did, and he said, I'm going to give him a perpetual priesthood, not because he's a murderer, but because he has a zeal for me, and that zeal is what provoked him to do what he did with the spear. Verse 14, the name of the slain man of Israel who was slain with the Midianite woman was Zimri, the son of Salu, a leader of a father's household among the Simeonites. And the name of the Midianite woman who was slain was Cozbi, the daughter of Zur, who was head of the people of a father's household in Midian. And then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, be hostile towards the Midianites and strike them, for they have been hostile to you with their tricks. Are you catching what God is saying? I want you to be hostile, militarily hostile. Take up your swords, your spears, your weapons, and be hostile towards these people because they have been hostile in their connivings to get you to sin, following the counsel of Balaam. That was Balaam's counsel. That's what Jesus was talking to John about when he was writing to the church at Pergamum, that was the counsel of Balaam. That's what was happening here in Phinehas nipped it in the bud, so to speak, and God is now saying, all right, we're going to follow through with this, and I want you to wipe these people out. Let's see, verse 18, let's finish it up here. For they have been hostile to you with their tricks, with which they have deceived you in the affair of Peor, and in the affair of Cozbi, the daughter of the leader of Midian, their sister who was slain on the day of the plague because of Peor. So now you know what happened there and why God gave Phinehas a perpetual priesthood, because of his zeal for God and for holiness, for righteousness. Well, let's go a little farther, but not too far, to the book of Nehemiah, the very last chapter of Nehemiah, chapter 13. And you may be familiar, I hope you are, somewhat at least, with the story of Nehemiah. He came back from Babylonian bondage to rebuild the wall. And that's what Nehemiah is primarily about. And so he has a contingent, thousands of Israels who have come back, but they are not keeping the will of God as they should, and that's what comes out here at the close of the book. This is chapter 13 of Nehemiah and verse 23. In those days, I also saw that the Jews had married women from Ashdod, Ammon, and Moab. Do you remember the origin of the Ammonites and the Moabites? Back in Genesis 19, God wiped out Sodom and Gomorrah. And Lot fled with his wife and two daughters. And what happened to Lot's wife? Right. People who don't know anything about the Bible probably know what happened to Lot's wife. She turned around, turned into a pillar of salt. So the daughters said, you know what? We don't want our dad's name to die out, so we're going to have children with him, get him drunk and have children with him, and that way his name will continue, and that's what they did. That's another R-rated chapter in the Bible. But those two boys were Moab and Ammon, and that's where the Ammonites and the Moabites came. Now, that doesn't mean they were automatically a bad people. Who's a very famous Moabite in the scriptures? Incidentally, she's in the lineage of Jesus. Her name is Ruth. She was a Moabitess. But in this particular instance, these guys have married women, and the Moabites and the Ammonites are not practicing godliness. They're certainly not practicing the law. And so this is what Nehemiah says to them. I saw that the Jews had married women from Ashdod, Ammon, and Moab. As for their children, half spoke in the language of Ashdod. None of them was able to speak in the language of Judah, but the language of his own people. So I contended with them and cursed them, and struck some of them and pulled out their hair. Are you seeing this happening in your mind? They're having a gathering. Nehemiah says, get the guys together. I need to do some talking here. And as he's talking to them and telling them what they've done, he begins to curse. And he begins to strike them. And he begins to pull out some hair. Wouldn't you like to see just a 30-second video? What's going on here? Now, is that the Christian thing to do? There's no further commentary on this. The Holy Spirit just said, write it down. This is what happened. And by the way, this is at the end of the book. So it says, verse 25, finishing it up, you shall not give your daughters to their sons, nor take of their daughters for your sons or for yourselves. Did not Solomon, king of Israel, sin regarding these things? Yet among the many nations there was no king like him, and he was loved by his God, and God made him king over all Israel. Nevertheless, the foreign women caused even him to sin. What's this all about? Where is Nehemiah's zeal coming from if not for his fervent desire for purity among God's people? That's what it was in the day of Phinehas. A zeal for God and for purity among God's people, for righteousness to prevail. There was an influence coming into his people that God did not like, and he had already ordained that those who were leading that sinfulness be put to death, and Phinehas took the initiative and killed those two people right there, and God says, I'm giving you a perpetual priesthood because of your zeal for me. Not because you're a fellow looking for an opportunity to do violence. It wasn't that. It was about his zeal for God. And in this case, Nehemiah's zeal for God is what got him back to Jerusalem in the first place. And now he's looking about and he's saying that some of those he's brought back with him to reestablish Judaism in Jerusalem are not being faithful practicers, keepers of the law. And so he contends with them. He curses them. He slaps them, strikes them, tears out their hair. And it's, yeah, very interesting situation as I read it here. But it's all based on leaders of God's people wanting righteousness to prevail and to prevent this kind of insidious evil from coming in among God's people. John chapter 2. One more. John chapter 2 and verse 13. The Passover of the Jews was near. Jesus went up to Jerusalem. He found in the temple those who were selling oxen and sheep and doves and the money changers seated at their tables. And he made a scourge of cords and drove them all out of the temple with the sheep and the oxen. And he poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. And to those who were selling the doves, he said, "Take these things away. Stop making my Father's house a place of business." And at that point, what did his disciples remember? They remembered that it was written, "Zeal for your house has consumed me." That's from the 69th Psalm, prophetically speaking of Jesus and his zeal for his Father's house. So we've got Phinehas, who drives a spear through a couple of people out of his zeal for God. We've got Nehemiah, who's slapping and cursing and pulling hair off people's heads out of his zeal for God. And we've got Jesus, who is using a scourge to drive out the animals, turning over money changers' tables and scattering their coins. And it's interesting to me, because there's nothing said about this. But there were temple guards. There were men whose job it was to be guards at the temple to keep order. And there is never anything recorded, nothing said about any of those men trying to stop what Jesus was doing. I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm just saying there's nothing in the record about it. And when the accusations were made against Jesus, no accusation was ever made. Well, he came in and upset the temple by turning over the tables of the money changers and doing what he had not to, ought not to do. We tried to arrest him with our temple guard. See, nothing like that ever came up. It's very interesting how this all happened. I have to wonder, in the back of my mind, I wonder sometimes, and this is just pure conjecture on my part, if there weren't some of those temple guards who were observing this and saying it's about time somebody did something. Now that may be just as far from what really happened as it could be, but you and I know that's how it works in the world. We see things going on and we wonder, is anybody ever going to do anything about this? And then Phinehas did something about it. And then Nehemiah did something about it. And then Jesus did something about it. And here we are in an election year with all these lies flying around, with all these accusations being made, with two very interesting candidates being put before us. And we might wonder to ourselves, is anybody ever going to do anything about this? Well, I think we need to start praying. If we haven't already, we need to be praying. We need to be talking to God. We need to be talking to our neighbors. We need to find a way to communicate with them. There's a right way to live, and there's a right way to be governed. And all you have to do, really, I don't believe in preaching politics, but it's not politics when you're talking about morality. I challenge you to look at both platforms and see which one lines up more with godliness. So, there's basically the lesson for tonight. These are some things that I've been thinking about. As you read these, you can't help but take note of somebody being pierced through with a spear, and the guy who does it gets a perpetual priesthood. You can't help but take note of a leader, one of God's leaders, cursing people, slapping them, pulling out their hair. You can't help but notice when the Son of God comes in to the temple and throws people out. There's some things that need to be corrected. Maybe you and I need to be part of the correction process. Well, maybe there are things that you know in your own life that need to be corrected. Maybe you've never put Christ on in baptism. Maybe there are things going on that you know it takes more than what you're able to do, and so you need prayer. Tonight, as we're gathered, we always offer opportunities for people to do what they believe to be most right, and if we can help in any way, that's what this invitation song is for. Bobby's ready to lead it. So if you lead the invitation, it's up to us whether or not we want to respond. Let's stand and sing together.